Our nation has been on an urbanizing blitz, especially over the last century. And according to the numbers, rural areas are being left behind. We're talking about these rural challenges on The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. According to UN estimates, a little over half of our world's population lives in urban areas. And as we look at how the next several decades will unfold, about 70% of our world will be city dwellers. Do you worry about the economic viability of the small town you live in? Do you think the area can turn things around, or do you see the decline as permanent? We're at 800-642-1234 to join in. David Swenson is an associate scientist in the economics department at Iowa State University, and his recent piece for the website The Conversation is called "Most of America's Rural Areas Are Doomed to Decline." David, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Well, thank you.
Well, you're a researcher who has studied rural economies for decades now. Doomed is a really harsh word, David. What are you seeing here? What led you to this conclusion?
Well, this isn't a recent conclusion. We've been studying this for a very, very long time, not just me for the last three decades, but for the last century. Many of the counties in the Midwest saw their peak populations in the early 1900s. And in the case of, for example, Iowa, three-quarters of its counties' population peaks occurred in 1940. So rural decline is a fact of life in most of the Midwest and large parts of the United States. Now, that rural decline has always occurred because, well, basically, urban areas are growing faster. Urban areas are more attractive to people for jobs and opportunity. That's why they're urban areas, and by definition, rural areas have fewer people. And so we've always had that flow. But in recent decades, and I say at least the last 15 years, if not going back to the farm crisis of the mid-1980s, but especially in the last 15 years, this depopulation of much of our rural space has become acute. It has started to affect the other industries that still remain there. They're not able to find workers. It's starting to affect the social fabric more so than it had in the past for many of the communities, in that they're struggling to maintain their community governments and essential infrastructure and those community networks that are important for a well-functioning community. And so what I say when I say doomed, it's maybe the word is simply destined. And that's really what we're living with and trying to acknowledge reality.
David, let's look at more recent history. Mm-hmm. How were rural communities, small towns, impacted by the Great Recession?
Yeah. One of the things I do in this piece is I distinguish between metropolitan places, those with a central city of 50,000 or more, micropolitan places, those mid-sized cities that are from 10,000 but not 50,000, and then everybody else, every other county that doesn't have a city of 10,000 or more. So I have these three levels. Since the Great Recession, remember, I'm measuring just before the recession and after the recession. I want to know how have we weathered all of this and what's happened. Since that time, nearly 99% of net population gain and net employment gain has accumulated to the metropolitan counties. The remaining 1% has been split among the rest of those micropolitan counties and those rural counties in the United States. So that right there just tells an incredibly stark story of where economic and demographic advantage is accumulating in the United States and where it is not accumulating. The other thing that I was able to show in this short piece was that we have regions of the United States that are disproportionately disadvantaged. Most of those gains in people and population are accumulating to the South and to the West. The greatest stress or losses were accumulating to the Northeast, to include New England, and we in the Midwest are not very far behind New England in terms of slow performance. And so we're really being hit hard here in the Midwest in terms of our rural areas not recovering, continuous depopulation of much of our rural space. There are differences across the states. Your state, Wisconsin, doesn't look as bad as Illinois, for example, or Iowa, for example. And so there's lots of variation. But a simple fact remains that disproportionate gains are accumulating to urban areas, and disproportionate losses are being realized in our rural places.
And we're talking about this rural-urban divide with David Swenson. He's an associate scientist in the Department of Economics at Iowa State. You can join in, 800-642-1234. What has your small town done to try to increase its viability as more and more people move to cities, urban areas? What could policymakers do to best support you and your community, a resident of a rural area? We're at 800-642-1234, email ideas at WPR.org. David, let's look at the correlation between job growth and population growth. It seems sort of obvious that when there are more jobs, there would be more people. But how closely is that linked?
Well, it is a pretty strong link. There's the degree to which jobs are able to support people varies by level of urbanization. You add jobs in a more urban area, you tend to be able to support more people. Jobs added in more rural areas, we still add jobs in rural areas. Many areas tend to show increases in employment, but decreases in population. And it gets to be a little bit complicated. But overall, yes, there's a good, strong, positive, predictable relationship between job growth and population stability. That in and of itself is the core to rural stability. But job growth isn't enough, because it's the mix of job growth that also matters. What created the prosperity of many of our rural areas was the twin engines historically of manufacturing and agriculture, or it might have been forestry or mining, but some sort of combination of resource exploitation or use, as well as manufacturing. And both of those were industries over time, both of those dimensions require fewer and fewer workers to produce more and more output because of technology. And so we never had anything to replace that out in rural areas, those original industries. And so as a consequence, our communities, which were built at a time for larger places, don't have the workforce and the workforce demand that they used to have, and therefore they struggle to maintain their physical space. They suffer from blight. They suffer from absence of an investment. And so, you know, job growth in and of itself isn't enough. We need job growth. We need good job growth. But the fact of the matter is, most of the places aren't going to get the kind of job growth that's going to retain their populations.
And it sounds like, too, automation has had an impact as well, as companies are able to do more things robotically.
Well, that's true, but automation has always been an issue, over especially since post-World War II. Rapid automation and rapid mechanization and rapid application, for example, of chemical fertilizers as fertilizers and other kinds of input changes into agriculture, all of those things decrease the demand for labor, and that excess labor has to go someplace else. It goes to urban areas.
We're talking with Iowa State economist David Swenson. He's looked closely at the numbers between rural and urban areas. He stays with us. Do you live in a rural area of Wisconsin? What have you seen in terms of job opportunities and population change? Are people moving in, moving out? What jobs are available? Join in the conversation, 800-642-1234. You can email ideas at WPR.org. We'll be back to this in just a minute here on the Ideas Network. We've heard about how small towns around Wisconsin, across the nation, have worked to support themselves as rural populations continue to decline, while a big share of state government money is directed at larger cities where the population centers are growing. So we're looking at where this leaves our rural communities. It's The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. What has your small town done to try to increase its viability as more and more people move to urban areas? What could policymakers do to best support you? Join in at 800-642-1234. Tweet us, WPR Mornings. David Swenson stays with us. He's an associate scientist in the Department of Economics at Iowa State. Let's go to the phones now with Chris joining us from Adams. Good morning, Chris.
Good morning. I live in one of the most impoverished counties in the state of Wisconsin, and I live in the only virtual city that's in the county, which is between 3,000 and 4,000 people. I'm a refugee from a big city. Graciously, I'm absolutely happy about that. There are a couple of things that have happened here. The first is that we're losing our only, quote, big box store, and that Shopko is closing. And the major impact for this small town in that is that we're losing our pharmacy. And so for elderly people and disabled people who don't have transportation, that becomes a very real issue, whether or not somebody's going to pick that up and open a small, you know, pharmacy is whether or not that happens or somebody takes over the space. But we have a somewhat thriving downtown. And the reason for that is that people frequent these small businesses because they really, really are customer friendly and they take care of us. And the other thing I wanted to say is that there's a lot of stuff. I'm an arts person and there's no culture here. And there's a lot of stuff out here I can't get, but it's very friendly and it's very safe and it's very quiet. And I can have almost anything I need delivered to my door in 24, 48 hours if I really want to have it.
Chris.
Because there's a lot of stuff I can't get. And I can go on the Internet. Let me just make this point.
Yeah.
I can go on the Internet and get a lot of that intellectual stimulation that I need. So there's all kinds of electronic stuff that has happened that people do not have to live in a big city anymore if they really don't want to.
Chris, you make such interesting points that, David, you can start to pick apart here. First being that the big box store Shopko closed and access to having your medications is not close by.
Well, that's one of the more common things that have happened. You end up getting retail trade and service activity starts to shift over to whatever the next largest cities there are. We call them regional trade centers. They might be from 5,000 up to 10,000 or more. And so you get this continuous accumulation of retail trade and service activity concentrated in these areas at the expense of the surrounding communities. That's just a fact of life. That's been going on forever. But it's, again, it's more acute. And we've seen this just recently with this Shopko closing, because Shopko was one of those, it really isn't a big box store. It's kind of a medium box store. And it had a lot of diverse products in the Shopko, but it wasn't like a Walmart. It wasn't like a Target. It was the next level down for a lot of these places, and they were very, very important commercial anchors. She makes the point that she can get anything delivered to her from anywhere, you know, online. Well, that in and of itself, though, is also undermining rural retail trade and rural commercial viability. We all do this. That's not a criticism, but it's just one of those facts of life that maybe impacts rural areas even more because their commercial operators, their retail outlets, often operate on much thinner margins and are much more vulnerable to competition, not just spatially, but also over the Internet.
Well, David, tell me this. If you see a small town which has, from the look of it, a vibrant downtown where there's occupancy, there are people walking in and out of shops. Is that an indication that a smaller community is doing okay, is doing well, or can there still be all of this going on in the background of population decline and some serious issues?
Well, it's a combination of things. If people have a lot of loyalty and local identity, and that varies a lot between communities, among the communities, but if they have a lot of local identity and a local loyalty and they have a tendency to shop locally, you do see that kind of commercial vibrancy in many of our small communities. We see other communities that look like similar structurally, but their own commercial activity isn't so vibrant. So there's a lot of ranges. We talk here at Iowa State University, and we partnered with other people on this, that it's because you're declining doesn't mean you're dying. It just simply means that you're adjusting to conditions in your region. And that doesn't mean that it's all doom and gloom, as what maybe it was represented by the title of my piece, but that you can still be great places to live. They call it shrink smart. And that you focus on maintaining both those economic and social and other amenities that matter to your population, that you spend more time making sure you're taking care of your place and the people in your place, as opposed to being externally distracted from either trying to attract new employment or adopting some kind of gimmick, whatever it might be, in the hopes of somehow hitting a home run and getting a factory or whatever it might be that are going to totally change your fortunes. We're offering, and what we're suggesting is you take a very, very realistic approach to what's going on in your communities and then start working with the talent and the assets that you have.
So for policymakers to seriously consider thinking shrinking smart, if you will, mm-hmm. how would an understanding of the fact that these communities are shrinking, how can that help policymakers understand what to do next?
Yeah, it's very, very complicated. I end that article with the very potent assertion is that we don't know what to do about it. We really don't know what to do about it. And so that makes it hard for us to make recommendations. Here's what we know. We know that, for example, smokestack chasing, manufacturing, over time, over the long run, we're going to have fewer manufacturers than more manufacturers. And over time and over the long run, we're going to have fewer employment in those kinds of areas. And so the whole idea of chasing jobs oftentimes becomes problematic, and trying to recreate what we used to be is nearly impossible. So trying to figure out what we're going to be is also nearly impossible. What we believe, and what we here at Iowa State are the people that work with me, we believe that we should be doing a lot more to stabilize what we call regional trade centers. These regional trade centers ranging in size from in Iowa about 4,000 or 5,000 up to about the largest is about 29,000. And that we invest resources in stabilizing those communities, nearly all of which are contracting, stabilizing those communities, investing in necessary infrastructure, making sure that we have educational opportunities through our community colleges, helping them if we can develop leadership, but recognizing that those regional trade centers are the employment hubs now in modern society for that larger region, and that the healthier these regional trade centers are, the more sustainable and durable some of the surrounding communities can be, because they no longer can compete with these larger communities for jobs, for people. And what we really want to do is try to stabilize these regions around these trade centers. That's what I believe. Also, I believe that we need to start investing more resources in making sure that the disadvantages of rural life, whether it's isolation or transportation or access to health care, and now we're talking about broadband, that the disadvantages of rural life are mitigated to the degrees possible. That means that we cross-subsidize and we pay attention to the needs and stop defining rural problems in terms of either farmer incomes or absence of jobs, and start paying attention to what are the tangible needs of people out in rural area. And state and federal policy ought to be developed to address those tangible needs.
David, before we have to let you go, I do want to ask you about the fact that we're coming up on a presidential election. We're going to see candidates all across Iowa and all across rural areas devoting a lot of attention to swaying rural voters. While the economic power of these areas might you know, be trending downward. Is there political sway in rural communities?
There is. Right now, the political sway in rural communities is disproportionately affected by Iowa farmers. And that's one of the problems we've had, I think, with regard to policy development over the years, is politicians will come to Iowa first in the nation, the caucuses, and then they have to express some sort of fealty towards rural interest as expressed through primarily farm interest, whether it's a promotion of ethanol, which was last decade or more, or now because of the depressed farm incomes, we have a variety of proposals that are designed to promote farm employment or farm profitability. So we do get disproportionate. Rural gets disproportionate, but only insofar as it affects primarily farming. Mm. If I ranked all of the major industries, employment in major industries in non-metropolitan the United States, farming ranks eighth nationally. Manufacturing ranks second, and government ranks number one. So the politicians miss the boat a lot of times by just trying to sell to farmers.
David, thank you so much for joining us.
And thank you for asking.
David Swenson is an associate scientist in the Department of Economics at Iowa State, and his recent piece for The Conversation is called "Most of America's Rural Areas Are Doomed to Decline." Coming up, light trespass is the poor control of outdoor lighting that crosses property lines. We'll learn more about it after this news update. Stay with us on the Ideas Network.